So I want to admit something to you about my movie watching habits. I have already twice seen the new Bob Dylan movie. Twice. I'm a big fan. My mom got me my first Bob Dylan cassette. This is like right before CDs. Some people had CDs. I didn't quite have that yet, but I got the freewheeling Bob Dylan. Didn't know what to make of it. Still, I'm not sure what to make of a lot of his material, but I'm a fan of his songwriting. So I've seen The Complete Unknown movie twice now, and it sent me on a rabbit trail to hunt down some more things on YouTube and the rare times that Dylan will give interviews. And when he does, he usually doesn't shoot straight. He makes up things and badgers the press. But he often talks about how his lyrics come to him, and he can't really name it. He says it's magic. Sometimes they just come to him in a dream. And I hear those kinds of things, and you may be like me. When I hear people say, like, a voice spoke to me in that way, there's two reactions that I have and you might have. One is skepticism. That didn't really happen. You're making it up. In Dylan's case, there may have been some chemicals involved in these voices. Or a reaction of envy. Like, I wish that could happen to me. I've never had that. And I think even as Christians, we feel that reaction sometimes when people say, I heard something from God. We're either skeptical because we think if it didn't happen to us, it couldn't possibly happen to anyone else. Or we're envious and we think, I'd love to hear directly from God. That would be great. I've got this thing happening right now in my life, and it would be great if I could hear something from God, but there's too much noise and I don't know what God is saying. So I stand before you as a person who cannot claim to have ever heard audibly the voice of God, but I can claim to have heard the voices of God. In the year 930, round about there, the nation of Israel was on the cusp of a divide. King Solomon had ended his reign in not a great way and had left the nation in disarray, both politically and theologically. And God told Solomon, I'm going to take these 12 tribes of the nation of Israel and divide them, and you and your family will only be left with two, and I'm going to give 10 to this other guy who used to work for you, Jeroboam, and so the kingdom will start to split because you haven't been faithful, Solomon. So in 930, Solomon's son, named Rehoboam, is off to the city of Shechem for his coronation. It's sort of the inauguration day for him. And so he's left with his two tribes, and he's headed up to the city. And the people up north, Jeroboam and his clan, they think, let's go down and talk. Maybe their motives are to see if they can avoid a division after all. Maybe they have some secret scheme to gain an advantage. Not sure what the exact motives are of this, but they go down and they meet with Rehoboam, and they come with a request. In 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 4, we read their request. This is the people up north, Jeroboam, to Rehoboam, the people in the south. Your father, this is Solomon, put a heavy yoke on us. But now lighten the harsh labor and the heavy yoke he put on us, and we will serve you. So they're saying, your dad made things bad and was cruel, and you got a chance to make things different, and maybe we can still serve you, and you can be the king of everyone. Rehoboam answered, go away for 3 days, and then come back to me. So the people went away. This is good. This is level-headed. This is someone not giving a quick response that might not be the best one. So he says, give me 3 days. I need to consult with people. Come back, and I'll give you an answer. So the first thing he does is to consult essentially his father's cabinet, the wise elders of the society. And he asks them, what should I do? And they say, if today you will be a servant to these people and serve them and give them a favorable answer, they will always be your servants. Essentially saying, show some diplomacy. And if you can come at this with some humility, in the end, it'll be to your advantage. So just go out there and play nice. And maybe you'll have 12 tribes under you instead of two. But Rehoboam rejected the advice the elders gave him and consulted the young men who had grown up with him and were serving him. So the sages say, make peace, humble yourself a little bit, play the long game, Rehoboam rejects this and talks to his buddies. You know, the guys who he went to high school with and did all the partying with and put in his cabinet. And this is their advice. They are not quite so diplomatic. They say, no, go out and you tell him this. You tell him, my little finger is thicker than my father's waist. My father laid on you a heavy yoke, and I'll make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions. Now, this is the adolescent club here. This is juvenile humor. I'm going to keep this top level, but if you read Hebrew and understand what's going on here, there's some different references to what we're comparing. I have two adolescent boys in my house. I was an adolescent boy. I know how this goes. There are essentially three topics of conversation: video games, human anatomy, and restroom habits. I know. This is what he's surrounding himself with. This is the advice that he's gotten, and he's going to go meet out. You just go tell him you're more important than your dad. So, of course, the Northern Kingdom rejects this. They don't want any part of this. You want to speak to us like that? We're out of here. We've got more tribes than you. We'll just go back home. We don't need you. And eventually, they stone Rehoboam's henchmen, and they force Rehoboam himself to flee in a chariot. So that didn't work out well for Rehoboam and the Southern Kingdom. If only Rehoboam had chosen to listen to the advice even people like his father and grandfather wrote and gave. Advice like we read in Proverbs, like the way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice. Or plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. Listen to advice, accept discipline, and at the end, you will be counted among the wise. There's so much, even in the Bible, about listening to wise counsel. As we are in this series on discernment, last week we talked about praying for wisdom, but in the end, we still want to know what that wisdom is. And we are shaped so much by the voices that we choose to listen to. And most of us spend too much time listening to the wrong voices. And if we want to hear from God, those voices have to get smaller. For some of us, the main voice we listen to is ourself. We think we can just trust our gut. Now, obviously, we didn't come to our own knowledge and way of being in a vacuum. We've been shaped by other sources, but we pretend like we haven't. I don't need anyone else. I'm going to be true to my own self. I don't need those experts. I don't need anyone telling me what to do. It's just me on my own, and I can figure this out by myself. Because I've learned enough. I know more than everyone else. I'm just going to trust myself. I don't need to ask other people for advice. Some of us spend too much time just assuming we can go it alone. And whether that's out of fear or ego, we don't consult anyone else, any other source. We think we are the main source of truth and wisdom in our lives and sometimes in everyone else's life. So sometimes we listen to ourselves too much. Another bad source we listen to are yes people. We surround ourselves with those who will just affirm everything we already want. This is why a lot of organizational leaders, even church leaders, get themselves into trouble because they get to pick their own board or whatever, and they just stack it with people who won't ever be a check and balance on them. That's not a good model of people who say, just do what you want, and you've got our full support no matter what. This is when we go to dinner with a friend and gripe about our spouse, and they just tell us we're right about everything. Yeah, you're right. They can't be doing that to you. Knowing full well that there's part of the problem that might be us, but our friend just tells us it's all the other person. We spend a lot of time talking with people that will just affirm what we already think is the correct path. Some of us spend too much time with influencers who don't know us. Some of them don't even share our faith. Now, I believe that wisdom can come from multiple sources, and it's not always going to be Christians. But for some of us, the main source of wisdom we're taking in now are people who don't know us and don't share our faith. And I've been thinking a lot about this lately and reading articles about how people are searching for wisdom and clarity, and sometimes churches aren't providing it, so they're going somewhere else. So I've been thinking about that and what that means for preaching and teaching, and I get that. It's complicated. Somebody needs to tell me some clear things, and I'm not getting it from the traditional sources, so I'll go to other places. But this is leading to some problems, as now the main voices for many, mainly younger Christians, tends to be outside of any kind of faith context. So that long-form podcaster or that academic who is more interested in forming some sort of cultural Christianity, but who can't bring himself to confess that Jesus is Lord, you should stop going to them first before talking to your Christian brothers and sisters. It sometimes feels like we will hunt down any book besides the Bible and any person except that faithful saint who's been sitting on the pew for decades. So it's fine to consult those other sources, but sometimes we need to consult people who know us and share our core convictions about who Jesus is. So if, preacher, you're saying I shouldn't just listen to myself and I shouldn't just listen to yes people and I shouldn't be listening only to influencers who don't know me, who should I listen to? And what I want to remind us of is that the main source of God speaking to us is often going to be what I would call faithful friends or even mentors. You seek out counsel that will love you and affirm you, but also challenge you when you need to be challenged or help you rethink a decision when you're making the wrong one. People who will tell you the truth regardless of how you feel about it. I've been reading a lot of Bonhoeffer lately, and he has a quote that says, "The Christian needs another Christian who speaks God's word to him. He needs him again and again when he becomes uncertain and discouraged, for by himself he cannot help himself." Or Henry Nouwen, who says that people we meet, some who are great in the eyes of the world and some who are almost invisible to larger society, those people are often conduits of God's wisdom. So what I would ask you is, who are your people? Can you name them? Do you know whom you would call if you had a tough decision to make, you've been praying for wisdom, and you needed someone to help you sort through things? Who are the people in your life who will tell you the truth because they love you? Who are the people who will help you sort out your own motives that you can't even name? Who are the people who will draw you closer to Jesus as you make decisions? I'm confident many of you have those people. I'm very grateful I have had those people. For me, it was sitting down with a preacher named Don VinZant in 2008 when I thought I was going to go do PhD work in Old Testament and be a professor and had this job offer to go back into ministry, and I trusted his guidance to say, what am I giving up either way? Or people like presidents of Oklahoma Christian, Mike O'Neill and John DeSteiger, who were willing to give me time as a young minister when I was feeling frustrated about where my career might or might not be leading. People like John York at Lipscomb University, who guided me back into doctoral work in the way that made sense given my ministry context. People like my primary mentor, Jim Martin, who during COVID and the summer of 2020, when ministers were making mistakes but doing our best, counseled me before I met with some people who were upset at me. I told him all the reasons I thought that they were being unfair to me. And on a Zoom call, Jim looked at me and he said, "You know, Josh, I know it's just you and me here talking, and I get what you're saying. Do you think it would be helpful if you went out and said that in your meeting with them?" Nope. "No, Jim, it probably would not. Thanks for letting me vent, and I'll go out and behave myself in that meeting." We all have those people in our lives who can speak wisdom to us, tell us some hard truths, read the emails we think we should send, and then help us reword it to be more diplomatic. Elizabeth Liebert, who wrote a book on how to discern, suggests that everyone have a committee for clearness. She says this would be 5 to 6 trusted individuals, 4 hours for 1 to 2 sittings. Now, that may sound a little formal for you, a little too programmed, and that's fine. But she says, if you're facing a tough decision, form a group of people and get them together and ask for their time. Tell them what's going on. Let them speak to each other and to you for an extended period of time. Some of you right now are facing decisions or difficulties where you need something like this. You need people who will invest time and give you their wisdom. There are people in this room who have a lot of wisdom to offer. There are other people that you know who have wisdom to offer. These people, I would propose to you, are the voices of God. And they may not know it. They may not feel like they've gotten a word from the Lord to give you. But there are people who spoke in wisdom to me who didn't feel special, and yet what they spoke was godly wisdom to me. So some of you might be like Bob Dylan, and you might receive messages audibly, and I love that. I'm not going to question you or doubt that. That's not me, though. You may be like the rest of us, longing to hear from God in other ways. And so this is what Christian community is for. This is what we do. We speak on behalf of God to each other. There are people whose life is worth imitating. Seek them out. People who have your best interests at heart, even when they have to tell you a hard truth. There are others in this room who are in a place to dispense wisdom. You may be so humble that you don't think you are. But so many in this room, as I look out over you, you have some wisdom to offer. Maybe it's because you've been successful professionally. Maybe it's because you've been through hard things and can show other people the way. There might be, after today, someone ask you for some time. And I know time is valuable. And I want to tell you that an hour of your time over a cup of coffee might pay off for someone in ways you cannot imagine. And your investment of your valuable time could be a blessing to someone's entire life. And they might look back and name you as a key pivot point in their life. And I am begging you to make time for people who see you as someone who is wise and ask you for your godly counsel. This shared wisdom of the community of believers is not something to take for granted. So we give and receive wisdom, and in this way we can serve as the voice of God. One way Scripture tells us that we share wisdom with each other is when we sing together. Paul tells us in Colossians 3 to let the message of Christ dwell among you richly. As you teach and admonish each other with all wisdom through psalms and hymns and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. So we are teaching each other with wisdom as we sing. And so with that, let's stand, sing with gratitude, and share wisdom with each other.